Welcome in to another edition of Half Court Press. John Niatawa, Chris Hetty here with you. It's been a while, man.
It's been, I've missed you.
We had a nice little hiatus there in our last pod. I think you were on the phone, so we didn't get to see each other in
person.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, I was in Kansas City, which feels like it was like 3 weeks ago.
And a lot has changed.
A lot has changed with
the team that we're going to start the pod off talking about, and that's Creighton. Mm-hmm. Because I think at the time when we recorded our last podcast, the Jays were 2-1, and they just kind of looked a little bit discombobulated offensively. Just had lost to Ohio State. We're going to the Cayman Islands, and we're like, I don't know what to expect. And now suddenly they're riding high. Everything is cured offensively, and they're going to be rewarded with the opportunity to play the number one team in the country in Gonzaga on Saturday, which is going to be an awesome environment and just a really cool sort of setting mm-hmm. for college basketball in Omaha. Creighton basketball, they started playing in like 1920 or whatever. And I get that poles weren't a big deal back then. But so they went, you go from 1920 to 2010. What is that, like 9-10 decades? Mm-hmm. And they played one game at home against the number one overall, number one ranked team. And that was DePaul in 1980. One time. And then now they're going to get to do it twice in the last three seasons. Mm-hmm. 2016. Yeah. Three seasons because they played Villanova. It's weird. They played Villanova, number one team in the country, on New Year's Eve, 2016.
Yeah.
But it was the 16-17 season. So in like my head, doing numbers, very difficult. But that game was one of my highlights on the beat. I've only been on the Creighton beat for 2 years. This is the third. That was a highlight. The place was electric. Before the game, during it, afterward, Villanova's players were talking about how crazy the environment was. Creighton lost, but at the time it was the second time, obviously, in program history they had hosted a number one ranked team. First time in that building's history, what's now the CHI Health Center, where the Jays were playing as a top 10 team against another top 10 team. Mm-hmm. And it was an opportunity for Creighton, I think, in that moment with the season the way it was for them to make a statement. They weren't able to get it done, and that season sort of crumbled a bit after Maurice Watson had his injury. But that was a cool moment, and mm-hmm. I think we're going to get it again on Saturday.
Yeah, and this is a good Gonzaga team that just beat Duke, who we already crowned the national title.
We kind of did on accident. We weren't alone, but we did sort of sing the praises of Duke last
time. Have you watched much of Gonzaga at all? Like, did you watch the Gonzaga-Duke game at all?
I watched the end of it.
Yeah.
They blocked everything.
They're big, man.
Yeah, and they're so good at protecting the rim. Mm-hmm. And this is something that Creighton's coaches marveled at last year before they played Gonzaga at Gonzaga. And they talked about how good they were at just sort of swallowing up driving lanes or helping a defender who got beat and coming over and blocking that shot.
Yeah.
Layups are not easy against this Gonzaga team. And Creighton learned it the hard way out there. They were up by 8 at halftime last season, and it was actually kind of funny because I was there sitting. The arena is really small. Gonzaga's arena is really small, and maybe 6,000 fans or so. Mm-hmm. And where they have media sitting, you kind of feel like you're sitting right in the stands. And I'm sitting amongst Gonzaga fans and Creighton's, hitting ball screens, finding their big for lobs and banging threes, and the fans are like, what in the heck is this?
Creighton? Yeah.
Who are these dudes?
Right.
And I think eventually, Gonzaga
became Gonzaga.
Took that game and went on a major run. But one of the reasons why is because I feel like Gonzaga sort of lured the Jays into playing more one-on-one oriented. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys individually started trying to make plays on their own. They got into the teeth of the defense, but then they got blocked.
Yeah.
And then those blocks led to runouts and threes and dunks.
Yeah.
And I think Martin Crumple got dunked on by Killian Tilly, and that was painful. there were a lot of threes.
Yeah. Mark Few doesn't let them mess around very long. Like if Gonzaga's struggling.
And it was crazy how quickly the game turned so fast.
Right.
And most of these players are back. Now, Killian Tilly's hurt, So he's not going to play. One of their grad transfers, a new addition, isn't going to play. I think they lost two starters, Gonzaga did, but the core is back.
Mm-hmm.
And their best players have played really well so far, including a new addition in Clark, Brandon Clark, I think, who's blocking everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a really tall task for Creighton to just stay with Gonzaga on Saturday, but they have been shooting it really well. They're playing at home. That building, at least last year, had a near magical effect on the Jays at home. I mean, it's insane. I was just kind of talking with a couple of the Creighton guys yesterday about Creighton's home court advantage last year in Big East play. They played Xavier at home, lost by one, and on a game that they probably could have, should have won. When they played at Xavier, they lost by, I don't know, 17.
Right.
Lost to Villanova by 19. Lost to Villanova on the road by 19. Villanova came to Creighton. Creighton won by 6.
Yeah.
In overtime. Creighton got blitzed by Providence at Providence, couldn't get a stop, and then at home against Providence, they won by 18.
Yeah.
Seton Hall, same thing. Butler, same thing. You know, like, they were a totally different team at home, and you know, maybe the home crowd, the game's been sold out since single game tickets went on sale weeks ago. Maybe the home crowd can kind of lift them and boost them to play harder on defense and make some shots.
And there's a difference too close. That it's like on a Saturday. Like Saturday home games, like what time is the game at?
1.
Perfect. Like that's the perfect college basketball environment. Yeah. Like you don't want like a Tuesday at 5 p.m.
Yeah, because they had
a sleepy crowd.
That's
like,
the thing. They
perfect.
Played Ohio State at 6 o'clock on Thursday.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere was not good.
Sure.
It heated up after Creighton started getting things together offensively in the second half. But the Jays were up 10-2 in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ready for, like, you know, you think the home team up against a power conference team up 10-2 at the start of the game, like, the opposing coach is usually, like, either throwing his jacket
right.
somewhere or, like, calling timeout, yeah. waiting, yelling at somebody. And, like, Ohio State's just like, eh,
yeah,
we good.
Yeah.
And because, like, first off, it was a late arriving crowd and traffic was crazy, I heard, getting mm-hmm. in. Because people are leaving the downtown area, but game time matters.
Yeah,
and so, as the fans settled in and Creighton settled in, eventually, that atmosphere was pretty good down the stretch. But I would imagine from the jump on Saturday, it's going to be.
Is there a line on this game at all yet?
Probably not yet. Let's do a guess the line. What do I think it's going to be?
Yeah, what do you think it's going to be?
Gonzaga by. Six?
Really?
Yeah.
I was going to think of like Gonzaga 10, but maybe it bumps down it to could, like
no.
8.
I don't know. I'm going to say 6. Feels it might be low, but
but you Crane's a
different
game.
Yeah, they're a different animal at home. And so let's see, their offense over the last 4 games, I got it right here. Shooting 57% from the floor. 1.27 points per possession, and that's with a turnover rate that is much higher than they expect for themselves. Last mm-hmm. year, they were like 15% turnovers per possession. They're at 20% right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they think they can get it down. Now, it's been 7 games, and it's been a problem or an issue in each of those games,
right.
So maybe it's going to just be something they have to deal with all year, but they found something offensively.
Yeah. They look cleaner. Like, it looks faster. Like, they actually know what they're doing.
Yeah, and it was interesting because that Clemson game, I think, probably was... I think they had already sort of found their footing before that. But mm-hmm. I think that was, like, a moment to reaffirm, okay, yeah, what we're doing is legit.
Yeah.
We're working. Like, one of the things that... I think we talked about on this podcast. I talk so much about Creighton basketball. Sometimes I forget, but like early in the season, I didn't think the Jays were, running hard in and out of cuts. I didn't think they were pushing the tempo with an attacking mentality like they can. And like I've seen them do in practice repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
This is like their first 3 games. It just looked a little bit hesitant and they just weren't as aggressive offensively as a team. I think they were still they were definitely like working together as a unit, but I didn't think that they were working off each other. So if a player was able to get into the teeth of the defense, and maybe he kicked it out to a shooter, maybe that shooter wasn't ready to take a shot there or wasn't ready to attack a bad closeout and keep sort of the pressure going. It just seemed like if the first option of a play or of a possession didn't work, it was like, that's it.
Yeah.
What do we do now? Yeah. I guess we'll just have to wait until the end of the shot clock and throw something up.
Right.
But what they've done over the last four games is that it's just been repeated. Like each movement of the ball, whether it's a pass or a drive, has been done with a purpose, and it's created openings and gaps for another player to take advantage of, who then creates an opening for another, and then eventually you get a good shot.
Right.
And so then Creighton shoots 57% from the floor. But that, I think that Clemson game was big for their psyche because, again, it just sort of, to beat a team that last year made the Sweet 16 and returned a good majority of veterans, like, I think that was important for them to get that win.
And Nebraska beat Clemson too.
Yeah. Like, by how much?
16.
But it was on the road.
It was on the road.
I heard Nebraska Creighton fans going back and forth on this. Like, Creighton fans are like, okay, we beat Clemson by 5.
Right.
You guys only beat them by 2 on the road.
One
so.
On the road, one neutral.
But yeah.
But I don't know. It's funny that you say that that the Clemson game reaffirmed kind of like, yeah, we know what we're doing. Like, this is what we want to do. That's like exactly what happened with Nebraska. Like, exactly. Like, they, you know, we're kind of in this funk after Texas Tech, and there were a lot of people after that Texas Tech loss who I'm learning don't want to admit that they were like, this is bad, fire Miles, blah, blah, blah. Like that, which was like all over my mentions after the Texas Tech loss. And then they beat Clemson, and it's all like, give him an extension. This is great. This team's going to the Sweet 16, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But what the Clemson win did was James Palmer showed up. He played extremely well on both sides of the floor. They ran things through him. That was fun. Like, everything went well except for Isaiah Roby getting in foul trouble.
Yeah.
But like, when you get kicked in the stomach and then get a technical for that and then not touch a guy and get called for a foul, like that, like, that's going to happen. You're going to get taken out of the game whenever these random fouls happen. But like, literally everything else that Nebraska wanted to do.
Yeah, well, why did he push
Clemson
the dude's foot away?
Right.
I mean, if
it was
you get
only
kicked
in his face.
If you get kicked in the face, you got to just let it happen. I think that that's reasonable. Request from
the
officials.
Do you hate the double technical as much as I do?
Oh yeah, double text.
It doesn't
terrible.
Make any sense.
Double text and double fouls are really bad.
It's horrible. Like, and it's great too because the way the refs call it too.
It seems like a cop out. It's like, well, I don't know what just happened, but I have to call something.
Right.
So you both are in trouble.
Right. And it's almost like the way the refs call it. It's kind of like a parent being like, "You're both going to timeout," yeah. And it's like, okay, but that doesn't solve anything.
Right.
Like, anyway. It's interesting that both Creighton and Nebraska found their mojo with that one Clemson game because, and I think you'd probably agree too, like, Clemson's a good team, right? Like, don't you think they're still pretty good?
I don't know.
I don't know if they're as good as they were last year, but I still
think
that they're
not
good.
As good as last year. There's no question about that because they're missing a couple guys and they don't have as much depth as I thought they would. I mean, I think they're good enough to where they're going to be in contention for an NCAA tournament berth. Whether they make it or not, I'm not 100% sure. Like, I like their guards and that big dude inside, but they just didn't have much else after those top three dudes.
Yeah.
And watching, I mean, it's interesting because the Creighton game was up and down. Clemson let Creighton play at the pace that it wanted to, and Nebraska's game was...
It was grinded.
Yeah,
it was
a grind,
grinder. Man, yeah.
But... in both cases, I just didn't think Clemson could get a stop when they needed to.
Yeah.
And that was weird for the team that ranked 7th nationally in defensive efficiency last year.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, that's concerning because that's like who they are. And if they can't do what they're doing, I don't know. But anyway, I don't mean to downgrade it too much because we just don't know.
Sure.
Where Clemson's going to be.
Yeah.
What matters, I think, to both teams is that they, from their perception, it was a boost of confidence.
Totally, yeah.
So
I'd agree to that.
Even if it doesn't look as good today, or it doesn't look as good in March as it does today when beating Clemson, it's still going to, like...
It's still useful.
Yeah.
Like, it's very... I've talked and tried to write about this, but it's kind of hard sometimes of like when you are, because I haven't found the right metaphor, because like when you're a, I think I've talked about this on the podcast too, where like when you're a football team, you pretty much know who you are in their first game. Basketball, you kind of figure it out as you go. And the Clemson game, I think, for Nebraska was one of those like, okay, we know it works, we know it doesn't, we're moving forward. Like, we have a better understanding of who we are now.
Yeah.
And it was that way for Nebraska, too. And that game's coming up.
Yeah, Nebraska-Creighton.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Next week will be a fun podcast.
Yeah, we might even have to, we might have to do two. I don't know.
We might, yeah.
That'll be good. What else? Yeah, what else stuck out about Nebraska-Clemson? I'm trying to think. By the way, Tim Miles interacting with the fans there? I saw that.
He said thank you. Someone said something to him, and then he said, because there was a gift, and he said, I think he said thank you. I'm sure he said other things too.
It was a real good just jog and point.
Yeah.
And then just kept going. Yeah. So it was so many different things you could have read off that one.
Man, when he's in a good mood, he's like, he was in a great mood last night on his radio show, and they were talking about like the origins of Dorothea Lynch, and like we're talking about Ariana Grande's boyfriend who apparently plays for Rutgers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently. I didn't know this until Tim Miles broke me the news. So like, it's all happy and joy for Nebraska.
A lot can change in a week. Yeah. Like I said, it's wild. College basketball, that's what makes it fun.
And that's the thing, like, you know, last time when we talked, it was before Nebraska had lost to Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And they just looked bad. I mean, they looked all right for a while, and then Texas Tech is just, first off, I think Texas Tech is pretty damn good. And they're just tougher, they're bigger, they're stronger. Like, they just kind of bullied Nebraska.
It felt like they kind of beat Nebraska at its own game.
Yeah, completely. Like, that's what they do. They defend you like crazy, and then they just have bigger guys than you, and they just kind of throw it inside. And I think that game was kind of a wake-up call for Miles and for the team of, like, we're not as good as we think we are. Like, we really need to actually figure this out. And you could kind of sense some pressure building from the fan base, because a lot of the times when Nebraska basketball loses, it's kind of treated as a football loss where it's like, this is extremely important.
Yeah.
And like, they lost, therefore X, Y, and Z is true.
The end,
you know,
of days.
Yeah. Like, fire everybody, right. Like, shut down the program. Yeah. Like, there might as well be 0-6 Nebraska this year, or like 4-8 Mike Riley football. And then it's funny how quickly it turns. We're like, they play Western Illinois and they really didn't look that good. I mean, they had this like 29-3 run, and in that they looked pretty good, but then they kind of got lazy and kind of wanted to just get out of there. And I talked to somebody right after the words in the program, and they were like, I'm glad that game is over, because like, that game couldn't have ended sooner.
Yeah.
Because Western Illinois was just kind of chipping away. And then Clemson, where I picked Nebraska to lose by like 3, because I just didn't know if they were quite ready, came out strong, like, took a punch, punched back. Like, Isaac Copeland kind of led them in the first half, and then James Palmer kind of took over. Like, it was a good, I think the feeling in the program right now is good, because the things that they did well against Clemson aren't necessarily going to go away. Like, they defended really well. They didn't shoot particularly well from 3 at all, but when they needed a 3, they got one. Like, it was just kind of, these are
like
things that are building blocks.
Glenn hit a big one, and
Thomas Allen hit
a big one in the corner.
And James Palmer hit one from, like, a tiger paw, like, one of the like, fingers of the paw.
He's so good at those, like, if he gets an in-rhythm dribble, like, most of the time you're like, all right, we'll give that to you, but I don't know if you can give that to him. Like, you got to break his rhythm when he's dribbling.
Completely.
Like, he loves that, like, pull up.
And
he is so good at that.
And what he did well in the Clemson game specifically was he started from outside in. Like, his first shot was a layup. Like, if he has the first shot.
Inside out.
Inside out, yeah. Sorry. When he starts inside out and he goes, okay, layup or, like, 10-foot jumper or, like, just something easy, and then moves out, he's so much better than when he's, like, starts a game. All right, I'm just going to shoot. When his first 3 shots are 3s, that's an issue. Like, that's a problem. And that's why when he's just dribbling up, taking a shot from NBA range from the paw, you're like, okay, I'll take that now. But if that's your first shot, like, I'm not going to take that. So now they've got Illinois on Sunday.
Yeah, what's up? So I still don't even know how to wrap my mind around this little 2-game pod teaser of conference play that the Big Ten's going to do again.
Yeah, it's weird.
I mean, I like it because I like good basketball.
Right.
How does Nebraska feel about it? They're just like, eh, it's here. We got to just.
I think right now it's kind of like, this is a giant grind because you've got.
You shouldn't be feeling like you're grinding in December.
In December, I know. Because you're gonna have, it's going to make the season so long.
Yeah.
And you've got Illinois, which is like, they're 2-5, but they barely lost to Clemson. They should have beat Clemson. They should have beat Gonzaga. They had the ball down to.
Gonzaga?
Yeah. They had the ball down to against Gonzaga. In some tournament, I can't remember where.
Maui, they were out in Maui.
Yeah, and airballed a three and lost. And then they lost, to, I think, by two to Notre Dame. Like, this is a good Illinois team.
Yeah,
so,
they,
like,
they competed with Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they gave Xavier some fits. Georgetown, too. Xavier and Georgetown, I don't know how good they are. But, yeah you're right, though. They were in that game against the old schedule tells me they were in that game against. I didn't watch it against.
Well,
Gonzaga.
I turned it on.
They've got good guards.
They do. Trent Frazier's great. Yeah. Like, they've got good guards. They've got a good coach. And then you've got this game, and then you have to go to Minnesota. And Minnesota's looking pretty good.
Yeah, they just lost to.
They just lost to
Boston College.
Yeah, which is not a great loss, but still, they're 5-1.
They're capable.
Yeah, they're capable.
I guess you could say.
And you have to play that on the road.
Yeah.
And then you got Creighton, which is like. A much harder game now than it looked like a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. So this is like total grind time.
So ideally, obviously, 2-0. How, like, on a scale of
these next two games?
Yeah, these next two games for Nebraska. Like, you'd obviously like to start the Big Ten play 2-0, but given that you're playing an Illinois team that's projected to finish at the bottom of the league and a Minnesota team that could be in the middle,
mm-hmm.
like, how important is it for Nebraska to be 2-0? Because you know that. I mean, I think of like Purdue's playing at Michigan, Maryland. You know, other teams, Michigan State's going to Rutgers, and I don't know. Iowa's playing Wisconsin. You know that some good teams are going to lose this week,
right?
So, how important is it for Nebraska to get these two wins?
Well, it's important because you're playing two of the not as great teams in a close proximity, but it's important too because like this is going to carry with you for like a month. Like, you're going to take these two games, and they're going to play Creighton, and they're going to play, like, two lollipops in, like, near Christmas, and then you don't play another game.
They got Oklahoma State, who actually,
by
the way.
Oh, that's true. That's right. They got Oklahoma State, but it's
not
like a.
They look decent.
They look
decent.
Okay. Yeah.
So they played LSU, and I was impressed by it. I was impressed.
I think they're better than we think.
Yep. Yeah. Oklahoma State's better than we think, and they got some athletes, too, so it's going to be that. I'm actually, initially, when that game was scheduled, I was like, why are they playing Oklahoma State? At a neutral site. This
in
is going to be silly.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to want to watch that? But I think it's actually going to be fun. Yeah, it's going to be fun for you to cover because that team is better than I thought.
Yeah, and it's like a 5,000-person stadium. Like, it's going to be the weirdest. Like, the hotel I'm staying at is, like, literally right across the street.
Yeah.
Like, from, I can see my car right now where I'm parked. Like, that's how, it's the weirdest
thing.
That'll
be convenient for you.
But your thought is,
like, if they lose one of these games... Like, that's just going to stick in the back of their mind.
It's just a black mark on your record for a month, right? Because you don't play another conference game until, like, January. So, it's important to get these two. It's also important to get these two because, like, you're rolling right now. And that Creighton game is so important for so many different reasons. Because I think that if Nebraska wins that game, it is a springboard into, like, the next stage, you know? Like, I think a lot of this whole... a lot of mentality right now of like you have to continue to play well and confident, and you lose one of these, you start second guessing stuff. Like, it happens. Like, they lost to Texas Tech, and then they didn't look very good against Western Illinois, like, at all. But then you beat Clemson, then you want to look really good against Illinois, you know? So these two games are important just to kind of keep this train going.
So it was the Big Ten ACC Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Last year it was a disaster for the Big Ten. I think they lost 11-3. This year, more respectable.
Yep.
Kind of following the theme of the non-conference season so far for the Big Ten, in that it has done better.
it looks like a real conference.
Yeah. A real power conference.
Right,
not
yeah.
like a, is this a mid-major league type
really
question?
Really, Indiana's that bad?
Yeah, right. How did Nebraska only have this many quad one games? That doesn't make sense in a Big Ten. So, let's finish the podcast by just giving some takeaways, because I actually really enjoyed this week of basketball.
It was great. It really was great.
A lot of entertaining games and some standouts. what caught your attention from the Big Ten ACC Challenge, which, for the record, tied 7-7.
Did tie 7-7. My first thought is what I told you when we walked into this room, is that Purdue totally blew it.
Purdue is the scapegoat for the Big Ten.
Totally blew it.
They could have had the Big Ten ACC Championship belt. They give out a belt? No, they probably...
They should
crown Jim Delaney with a basketball net necklace.
Here's what you do. On the final night, you bring a belt to each of the final games, right? And whoever, because it ended up being Purdue was the final game to finish, and that was going to be the clincher. So you bring it to and you also bring it to North Carolina, Michigan, because maybe that game finishes last and the winner is crowned there. Whoever wins, if you win the actual whatever, they give you a belt, in which they crowned the Big Ten title winner.
Yeah, pride's on the line for your conference, right? And Purdue blew it.
Missed two free throws in the last minute. Decided they didn't remember how to dribble or pass for the last 30 seconds.
A lot of turnovers in the last 30 seconds.
It was bad. And Purdue's good, too. That was my first time watching Carson Edwards. He's good.
Yeah.
It took him a lot of shots to get however many points he
that's
got. Just, but
that's how he goes.
That's kind of the way it goes.
Yeah, he's going to take a lot of shots, but he always has these wow moments. He's a left-handed dunker.
Oh,
like,
really?
Preference when he goes up to throw down on somebody, he's going to go to his left hand, and it's powerful.
Yeah.
It
packs a punch,
man. It's one of those, when he rises up to dunk, you're stunned.
Right.
You don't move for a second because you're like, what?
Right.
That little dude just did that? Okay, sir.
Did you have any...
Let's see. What did I like? Brad Davison from Wisconsin getting 5 charges.
Every coach in the league now loves him. Every fan in the world now hates him.
Yeah, and he's automatically on the Big Ten All Defensive Team. He's already earned a spot on the media and the coaches. Certainly the media.
Absolutely. Because
I saw the ESPN did a compilation of all the charges he drew, and that was retweeted a gazillion times by everybody. So, I mean, you either love that or you hate it. Most of the people who love it are Wisconsin fans, are probably media members, but
there could not be a more Wisconsin thing, right?
Yeah.
Drawing that many charges. Is he the new Aaron Kraft now?
I don't know. Aaron Kraft was a legit good defender.
That's true. I liked Aaron Kraft.
Actually, great defender. Yeah. I don't know if Brad Davison is a great defender, but he certainly knows how to get to a spot and maybe act a little bit.
Yeah.
Or a lot bit.
If you got 5 charges, you're acting a little bit.
Michigan, by the way.
Remember
when we were talking about there's not a national title contender in the Big Ten?
I think they are. I think that they're better than Michigan State.
Yeah,
Michigan State looks okay, but Michigan beat the crap out of a good North Carolina team.
And Michigan beat the crap out of a pretty good, I think, decent Villanova team.
Yeah.
They absolutely, handcuffed Providence, and Providence is young, and I don't know how good they're going to be.
It's a weird thing.
Michigan is, they're legit. They just
John Beilein knows how to coach, man.
And recruit. People don't think he's recruiting good players. They're not highly ranked, and he gets guys, the Mo Wagners of the world, who you're like, I didn't see him at Peach Jam, so he must not be good. But man, they're really good.
They have a new Mo Wagner. I don't remember his name or how to pronounce it, but he's this lefty from Sweden or something, or Iceland or something.
He's phenomenal.
He's pretty damn good.
I gotta get the pronunciation of his name because I know I'm gonna mess it up. But
a couple more things. Duke beat the crap out of Indiana, so they're back to the best team of all time. And then Iowa's announcer got in trouble. So it was
that was a pretty funny moment.
Just packed full of just great drama.
He got in trouble for. Okay, the mic was on, it went to commercial, and he was still talking, and that's not ideal. And he did say some things about a player that
probably shouldn't.
Yeah, I guess if you're the home team's guy, but it wasn't that bad. He didn't cuss anybody out.
He didn't, but general rule of thumb, if you are around a microphone, you shouldn't say things that you shouldn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're saying he wouldn't say that on air. So if you're not going to say that on air, maybe don't say that, even if the mic isn't on. But
if
you're
in Nebraska's head football coach, if you're Iowa's play-by-play announcer, just be careful around microphones.
Yeah.
Which we probably shouldn't say because
we're literally sitting right by. I mean, I hate to bring it up. Nebraska fans, maybe cover your ears, but in that Iowa game, one of the guys that the Gary Dolphin, the play-by-play guy, was talking about was Xavier Johnson. former Nebraska commit who is killing it.
He looks extremely good.
17 points a game, 5.5 assists per game, shooting 43.5% from three. He's their leading scorer, he's kind of their top playmaker for Pitt.
Almost exactly what Nebraska needs right now. Like, almost exactly the exact person they need.
He's good.
He's really good.
So he stood out because he dropped like 18 and 6, I think, at Iowa. That was impressive. But Purdue's my alma mater, and I will admit they deserve the brunt of the blame for ruining this for the Big Ten. But Maryland,
yeah,
they're 0-5 in the challenge, man.
Yeah, they are.
You got to hold your water at some point. I know they had Virginia, and that's not easy.
But Virginia is always beatable. Always beatable. You shoot 45% from three, you can beat Virginia.
Easier said than done,
I actively cheer against boring things. Virginia basketball is so boring.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that I don't own a UMBC shirt. Like, I need one.
Yeah, you probably should.
So Maryland should have beat Virginia is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough. They're at home, though. All right. Anything else we need to cover?
Ken Pavelka is calling his 1,000th game on Sunday.
Congrats to Kent.
Yeah, and I think Kent does a great job. I got a story running on him on Sunday, but... just kind of cool. I don't think we talk about play-by-play announcers all that much, but
unless they're
leaving their mic on. But it's been interesting to get to know Kent, and like I just wanted to give him a shout out because I think it's kind of cool that he grew up idolizing Nebraska basketball and always wanted to be like part of it, like wanted to be part of the fabric of it, and now he's like one of the most iconic people in Nebraska basketball. And so. Kudos to him. 1,000, that's pretty cool. He's getting up there in age, but doesn't want to stop. So that's the only thing I've got. Nebraska, Illinois is on Sunday, and then Minnesota on Wednesday. But I guess we'll talk before that.
We'll probably talk before that. The name to know from Michigan is Ignis Brazdeikis.
Yes, yeah. He's great. And he has like a bad haircut and everything. It's from everything you want.
Lithuania, their new star, basically.
He's great.
And he fits in well with all their other pieces because they have a lot of good pieces.
Yeah.
All right, we'll end it how we always do.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska Creighton. Do you want me to pick first? Or,
yeah, you go first.
I got Creighton. Really? I don't know if I've picked Creighton
yet.
I don't
know if you have. How much?
If they played today, I would pick Creighton by 5 on a neutral, 1 on the road.
So 1 at PVA.
Yeah.
I'd probably take Nebraska by like 2. This is going to be a close game, dude.
Well, it could
this
be.
This might go into like 4 overtimes.
It could be close, but it's basketball. Sometimes it.
True.
You know,
true.
You take like the Nebraska Clemson game, mm-hmm. although Clemson at the end did some tricks and stuff and somehow it got a couple calls.
Yeah.
No calls. But like that wasn't a game at the end.
Right.
And it shouldn't have been.
Right. They won by 2.
Right.
But. They were up, and Creighton was up by.
Creighton's
more
a similar.
Than five,
their Creighton's game against Clemson maybe was a better because like the Jays were up by 8-12 for the majority of that second half, and then at the end Clemson made a late push. But
probably a week and a half ago, I would have said Nebraska by 10 or more. I'm saying Nebraska by like 2. It's going to be close.
Toss up. All right, we'll be back next week to break down Creighton, Gonzaga, Nebraska's Big Ten opener, and then obviously preview. The big game. We might have to do a double pod next week.
Yeah, we might.
We might. We'll see how the week goes because it's going to be a busy one. But Chris, thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you.